hej och välkommen tillbaka, eller välkommen för första gång till dig som skru på nå. Men jag regner med att jag är välkommen tillbaka. Jag heter Marius Hauge, detta är Kaptare. Detta är det vi jakter efter. Idag så tar vi nog ett en tur, vad ska jag säga, över Atlanten hela vägen över Atlanten, mellanlandar i New York, flyr vidare över hela det stora Amerikakontinentet, landar helt på västkusten mot det stora Stilla havet. Välkommen tillbaka till Sid Garza Hillman, mannen som har inspirerat mig till att lage podcast. Jeg avtalte en prat med han rundt samtidig som jeg avtalte med forrige ukes gjest som heter Lucy. Så ble det litt frem og tilbake, mest fra min del, noen utsettelser og sånn, men nå fikk jeg endelig satt meg ned og pratet. 9 timers forskjell det mellom Mendocino, California og Oslo, Norge. Så han satt der på morgenen, og jeg satt der litt sent på ettermiddagen. Heldigvis, lyden god. Sid lager sin egen podcast, spilt inn på sin side. Så jeg har satt dette sammen, og det høres bra ut, meget bra ut. Sid er en veldig sammensatt fyr, har veldig mange interesser og driver med veldig mye. Utrolig kreativ mann. Veldig god å kommunisere. Han er en mester av monolog. Han lager en podcast som heter No What Sid Thinks. Snart 100 episoder av den. Lagde en podcast som jeg har hørt på tidligere, som heter Approaching Natural, også navnet på en av bøkene hans. Han er filosof. Han er, som nevnt, podcaster. Han er musiker. Han har bakgrunn som skuespiller i Hollywood. Han er utdannet innen ernæring, jobber som nutritionist, som det heter, hva sier man, ernæringsekspert. Har veldig mye innsikt i veldig mye forskjellige, lager en podcast hver uke hvor han setter seg ned alene og snakker om et tema. Og som en venn av meg som jeg nettopp har snakket med i telefon sier, det er en veldig unik podcast faktisk. Og til dags dato så er det nesten ingen andre jeg har hørt på podcast som er så god på å bare sette seg ned og snakke og si fornuftige ting og si morsomme ting. Han er veldig morsom faktisk, så i denne podcasten så kommer det litt fram, men jeg prater med han om en god del ting. Han er også en løper. Han har fortalt litt om bakgrunnen sin. Han begynte også sent med løping, har løpt som oss vanlige dødelige en god del 10 kilometer, halvmaratoner, maraton, men han ble tidlig interessert i sin løpkarriere for ultraløping og stiløping. Så det har han drevet med. Han har et eget løp til og med som han har startet. Det er utrolig hva han får til å gjøre. Han har en YouTube-kanal, han legger ut videoer, små filosofiske snutter hvor han snakker om ting. Så jeg skal prøve å linke til alt dette i podcast-notatene som dere kan ta en titt på og linke videre til. Så ja, straks får dere samtalen. Jeg rota jo selvfølgelig litt med teknikken, så etter at vi hadde spilt inn 6 minutter så jeg at jeg hadde satt min opptaker til minus 20 decibel for jeg hadde gjort et annet opptak. Så vi måtte stoppe og begynne på nytt, men jeg vet ikke om dere merker det, men sånn er det. Ellers er føles som ting er litt gang igjen. Jeg har blitt kastet litt ut i noen jobber, fotojobber og noen videodokumentasjon og litt sånn, blir sånn sjokk start etter 2 måneder i litt sånn ingenting egentlig har blitt gjort. Så brått skjedde det mye her. Det var litt deilig. Vi må fortsatt passe på, selvfølgelig, med alt mulig med avstand og sånn. Så bare husk på at dere tar hensyn, men det vet jeg dere gjør. Vi er blitt godt drillet nå. Er det noe vi kan, så er det jo faktisk å forandre oss, selv om det er litt motstand. Men hvis det er til det bedre, så vil jeg tro at det er noe vi burde integrere. Og dette snakker Siri litt om. Han veldig dyktig på å vite hvordan man kan integrere ting I sin hverdag så det ikke blir overveldende. Han egentlig en ekspert på det. Så en del av det kommer fram her, og jeg Patreon til Sid, hva vil jeg si? Jo, jeg støtter hans podcast. Det den eneste podcasten jeg støtter. Og til dere som mine Patreons, tusen takk for støtten. Dere vet hvem dere og dere vet hva dere betyr, og de meldingene jeg får fra dere utrolig hyggelige. Så hvis du tenker at du har lyst til å støtte podcasten og mitt arbeid med denne, så det Patreon.com /kaptarepodcast, eller bruk link I podcastnotatene. Så snakkes vi etter praten jeg har med Sid. Ha en god løpetur. Welcome, Sid Garza-Hillman from California.
Nice to be here.
Yes.
Once again,
for the third time, actually. Just to be honest, I had a little mess up with the audio, so we recorded 6 minutes, and I was on minus 20 decibel on my side. So that would be very sad for the listeners, because my voice would be really low and yours would be really loud. So you're sitting there, I'm sitting in Oslo. Where is it you are, to be exactly?
Mendocino. Mendocino, California. So northern California coast.
How far from, let's say, most people in Oslo would know where San Francisco is, a little north of LA. So how far up from there by car? How many hours
we're,
to drive?
Yeah, I'm about 3.5 hours drive north of San Francisco. A lot of that is, you go north and then you cut over to the Pacific Ocean, and that's where we are, so.
You're almost out there on the coastline, right?
Yeah, I'm 2 miles from the ocean, and then the town where I work at the resort, that's right on the ocean.
Yeah, because where you work, it's called the Stanford Inn.
Yep.
And what do you do there?
I am the wellness programs director and nutritionist there, so I help with and then do some co-management of the restaurant there and just kind of help to keep things going.
Yeah. And as far as I know, because I listen to your podcast, they are closed.
Yes, now. They are closed. They've been closed since March-ish, and no signs to reopen. You know, we will reopen. We just don't have an exact date yet, so we're just kind of hanging, waiting for a vaccine or something to change the game.
Yeah. Things are starting to happen here in Oslo, by the way.
Are they?
Yeah, the things have changed pretty much the last 2 weeks. First grade till fourth grade started school. So my youngest daughter is back, and they're opening some restaurants and stuff like this now. So
good.
Yeah, it's good. We haven't been hit as bad as predicted.
Yeah, good.
So things are looking good. How is your community, or how is it there in California?
Well, excuse me, my county has only five. Last count was like 5 cases. So the county is, we no problem at all. We're just worried about, you know, people from San Francisco or Los Angeles, you know, coming up here when things get opened up. Because right now the county got away with, you know, nobody died, and we only had 5 cases all recovered and a fair amount of people tested. So no problems up here. It's just a matter of when things, if they open up too early, then we worry about that coming up. And so we're keeping an eye on it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little like that here as well. They're keeping an eye on things, even though things are getting back to a little more back to normal. But of course, everything is not normal anyway. So how are you coping with this, like personally and the family? And how are you looking at things?
It's not, you know, I got to say, like, it's not the worst thing in the world. I wish it weren't happening. And I know there's people who are having a really hard time with it. So I don't mean to belittle it. I just, personally speaking, we're getting by okay. We have a little bit of space around us. The kids can get outside. We're, you know, I'm going for runs and I'm busy with, I'm writing a new book and I got certified as a, I took a course to be a certified running coach. And so there's things I've been doing to, you know, that I my work, videos and the podcast and everything else. So that stuff keeps going, and it keeps me, because of the book especially, keeps me pretty busy. So my wife is a graphic designer. She works out of the house anyway. So for her, she's got her studio. The only difference is that we just don't go out as much. The kids, you know, aren't in school, and that's really a bummer because they have friends, and they, you know, as kids do. And so they're doing a lot of, like, they play Dungeons and Dragons, but they do it, you know, on with Zoom, you know, so they're like hanging out with friends on Zoom, and we're trying to keep that going so that they're, you know, interacting with their buddies. And so, and they're in online classes and things like that. So it's probably pretty typical to other people, I would imagine.
Hmm. And how are you looking at the whole situation in the whole of the US? How does it look from your side?
It looks like it was ill handled and still is by the government. And if we had a, you know, it's sort of like I did an episode recently on the podcast talking about true colors. You know, when stress happens, you see people's true colors. It's like the government sort of was doing its thing ridiculously. But then when this actually happened, you really saw the ineptitude and the inability to be a united front. And then you've got parts of the country that are just acting like this is an infringement on their rights, and it's like, oh, let this go for now. Can we just get through let's get through this thing and get past it, and be smart about it, and then we can resume. And they're acting like it's a First Amendment, you know, infringement. It's like, come on, let's not make this a legal thing. You know, everybody put a mask on, you know, and it's not a, you know, it's not Big Brother. It's just let's make sure that the elderly and people who are immunosuppressed don't get it, and then we can get vaccinated eventually and move on. It's frustrating to hear, because it's just like, come on, let's just move this. They're actually slowing things down is what's happening, I think. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little shocking to see, even though there are a few, there were some angry protesters with their guns into the
Michigan. Yeah, it's insane. It's insane. Yeah, it's insane. Insane.
It's like, whoa.
Yeah, and I saw this one person, like, it's my body. As if the government's making her, you know, do yes, it's so absurd and so uneducated that it's almost worth not talking about. But it's so crazy. And if they open up too early and we don't get a handle on this, there's going to be another spike, you know, and then they're going to end up, it's going to be worse, you know. So it's like, you just can't be patient. But anyway, I'm glad I'm where I am and not living in a big city, I'll put it that way.
I fully understand that. Even though Oslo is a pretty big city, I think it's been pretty good here. People were really good at staying inside the first times in the first few weeks. So,
the difference between like Oslo and Los Angeles is that Oslo is in Norway. So,
yeah. But I think people are pretty. A little fed up with the whole thing, kind of. But as you say, everybody's doing their best, and I see that things have really changed with people being more understanding with keeping the distance and being really. Yeah, it seems like people adapt really well and really fast. So I'm really glad for that, because I was a little bit worried at some point, how bad will this be? You know, because it seems so serious. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're happy about that. But you mentioned you do a lot of different things. And as I'm going to say in the intro to this podcast, I've met you before, and there is a whole episode where I'm interviewing you. And that episode is number 4. We met almost 2 years ago. It's been a while. As I said before we stopped the recording, that was the start of this podcast. Pretty funny. So we talked a little bit about running then, but let's do it a little bit more now, because one thing we can talk about after you tell me a little bit about, your experiences as a runner. You did an interview on a podcast called Trail Talk with the Rock Creek runner. I think his name is Doug Hay. And that was 4 years ago, and that was a good story. I listened to that over again. And afterwards, you can tell us a little bit about that, how you trained actually with very low mileage. And even though you did that, you were able to run a 50-miler.
50K, but yeah.
A 50K, I'm sorry. But anyway, it's pretty far. Yeah, like a trail 50K. So that was 6,000 feet of ascent. What do you call it?
Elevation,
Elevation, yeah. But tell us a little bit about your experience as a runner. As I understood, you started running also a little late, like myself, like in your 40s, or?
Well, I ran recreationally, you know, for a while, you know, jogs here and there. Mm-hmm. I did a half marathon, you know, one time in 1998, I think, or maybe I did two, I can't remember, but, you know, just to try it. 10Ks, like now and then. I didn't really enjoy the racing side of things. I just was, my dad was, did marathons, and so I was sort of around it, and I'll try it. And it just never really took, and so I didn't do it. I didn't really do it. And then finally, at 45, I was curious if I could do a marathon, and I had been doing, you know, by that time I was a nutritionist for a while, and my diet was improving, and I was feeling really good, and I thought, well, I wonder if this can translate into, you know, a marathon. Never done it, so why don't I do that? And so I ran two that first year when I was 45, and then just didn't like marathons. I mean, I did fine and finished them fine, and it was, but I just didn't like it. It wasn't fun for me, and I didn't really enjoy it. So I figured I had done it, and that was it. And then I read Born to Run, which a lot of people did, and found out that there was trail running that I really didn't even, it wasn't even on my radar. I don't even know if I ever even thought about trail running anyway. So I thought I would give that a try, and that was the thing I did. Got on a trail, and I thought, this is the thing. The switch went off. So the next year I decided to train for a 50 miler, the American River 50. And that was my first kind of getting into trail running, and thought, well, I'll plan for a 50 miler. And as a training run for that training of, for the 50 miler, I ran the, Way Too Cool 50K as a sort of a training, you know, training session. So that was technically my first ultra was the Way Too Cool 50K. So I did both of those that first year at 46, and have been running ever since, and mostly on trails when I can.
Yeah. I ran a little bit of that trail when I was there.
Oh, yeah?
Part of your, you also have a race, don't you? You're a race director of a race.
Yeah, in Mendocino. I direct the Mendocino Coast 50K. So it's a great race. Unfortunately, got canceled this year because of the coronavirus, but it would have been its fifth year, so next year will be its fifth year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually heard a podcast where you talked about that recently, and the guy who had the podcast, I can't remember his name, but he had run it all 4 years prior.
Andrew Lee, yeah, he's done it every year. Yeah, and he came in second last year or something. He's not just a runner, he's a good runner, you know.
Yeah, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, he's always been in the top, I think in the top 10 or, you know, but anyway, last year he was second, so it's crazy.
But that race, you talked a little bit about it there, so I can link to that show. But what you say is that it's a pretty small race with about 200 or 150 starters, or?
150, yeah.
150,
Yeah, I keep it at 150, and it's, I love that size, and it's sold out every year, and it's impacted a lot, actually, and so people ask me to grow it, and I just, if you saw it, like the things about that race that I love the most are why I created the race the way that I did is because my rule was I wanted to make a race that I would want to run, and so even to the boring stuff like parking, it's easy. Parking is very easy. There's no shuttles. You can show up 5 minutes before start, and you could park your car and walk to the starting line. And so if I grew it more than 150, all of a sudden I've got to do offsite parking. I've got to do shuttles. And it's less fun. I like the intimacy of it. And I greet people when they come, every person I greet when they come across the finish line. I can do that managed at 150, and any more than that, it just gets crowded for no reason. You know, I mean, I can make more money, but that'd be the only bonus. And I think it would be a lot more stress and not as much fun.
Because if you grew it, you had to get people to work for you, and you would have to manage it a lot more.
I mean, I have a couple people that, you know, I have my buddy Bree, who does the volunteer coordination. She's the assistant race director. And so I've got her, and I've got definitely, you know, up about 40 plus volunteers. But yeah, if I grew it, then I'd have to, it'd just be a beer. It's not my main job. And I want it to be fun. I know it's stressful, but I want it to be fun and rewarding. And it is right now what it is. And I don't want to change it because it's like right in the pocket.
When I listened to that podcast where you talked to Andrew Lee, I really wanted to come and run it. So I was thinking,
oh, it's so fun.
How can I do that? But it's really far though. But
well, so you know, I had, this year I had not got canceled, I had somebody coming from Japan, Australia, and the UK.
So you could have sold, how many do you think you could have sold if you opened up and just made it as big as possible? Would it be like several thousand?
I mean, if I see the thing is, I don't promote it. Like, I literally don't promote it at all. So without promoting it, all I do is I send an email to anybody who's run it and whoever signed up for my mailing list, and I say, okay, I'm opening registration. So based on that, with no promotion at all, I could double it tomorrow. Like, it would just be 300 right away. If I promoted it and actually, put ads in or social, like, I have no social media, so if I got a social media thing and did that, I could probably easily get to 500 plus. I mean, it's if I really was, but one of the things I like is that I don't promote it. I just like everybody know who's done it before and who's interested or comes to me and signs up for the mailing list. I go, I'm opening on November 2nd, and then I don't touch it. Like, that's it. And then this year's race sold out in 25 minutes.
Wow.
So it just sold out, and then I had another 90 on a waiting list within 2 hours, and that was it. And it's just kind of been what that is. So yeah, I could grow it if I really wanted to, but honestly, like, I don't even know if I could get the permits for something that big, the state parks are very nice to me because it's a very managed race, and they know there's not going to be any damage, and the trails are, after the race, you wouldn't even know that we were on the trails. Like, we pick up everything. There's no trace of us at all, and I think that's really nice for them.
Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah.
There's a trail run that I was supposed to do in the end of May that also has this. It's much bigger. It has, I don't know, 2,000 or something. But
yeah,
they have different distances. But they also have this policy of no littering, and they don't give out any cups. You have to bring your own bottle to fill water and everything yourself. So yeah, I really like that. So
I do that too. Yeah, I don't make people bring a bottle, but I give them a reusable, it's called Ultra Spire, whatever. I can't remember the brand. I bought a different brand this year. But anyway, they're reusable forever, and so I give them that. So I don't do cups at the aid stations. And I hire a few people to go back out on the trails after post run and clean up all the marking. And I use biodegradable marking and all recyclable and compostable for like the food afterwards. It's all recyclable and compostable dishes and things like that. So I keep things very, very ecological.
Yeah. No, I will post a link to that race, that website, so anybody from Norway can come and run next year.
Heck yeah.
But now I guess it's sold out next year as well, because all the ones from this year, I guess they have a spot next year, or?
They do, and they may not take it. So they have a guaranteed spot and for 100, for free. Well, whatever. But anyway, I'm not going to charge them again. Anyway, so they have a guaranteed spot, but I'm sure there'll be some people who don't come back. And so there may be some open spots for people.
Yeah.
So.
No, we'll see. But what about your own experiences with ultra running? For me personally, being mid-40s, ran a few marathons, I would say that for me going into ultra, I would think, oh, it's too much running, too much training, putting on top of your life, How was your experiences with all that?
Well, in the beginning, it was a lot because I hadn't done one before, and you have that, that first run pressure. I've never done this before. I want to finish. I didn't care about winning. I was 46. I just wanted to, can I do a 50 mile race? That was the deal. And so actually, I read a bunch of books on it, but then I've hired a coach, because I heard him on a podcast, this guy, Matt Flaherty, the professional ultra runner in Indiana. And he said he coached, and I thought, God, I don't know if I could afford this, but let me give him a call, or I emailed him anyway. And it was like $120 per month. I don't know how this guy makes any money, but anyway. So I said, can I just hire you for a couple months, to just get me going? This is like 6 months ahead of the race. And he said, sure. So he, did training plans. We would talk every week or so, just a quick, 5 minute call. And he would craft my training plans and gave me some really good insights in terms of the ultra mindset, which is a much different way of running. It translated so well into my work with small steppers, my approach that I teach to health and health and happiness and stuff. And so it translated, which was to slow down, and he would mix things up with food. He'd go, today don't eat anything for the first 6 miles, and then have something else for the last 6 miles, and the next day we reverse it, and some days we'd do gels and other days we would do real food, like a peanut butter jelly sandwich. He really was trying to mix and match and kind of get me the feel of what it was like to be out there that long. I did it, and I finished that 50 miles 11 hours and 52 minutes. You're out there, it's a long day, and so to manage that stuff was really cool. And so I hired, so after the 2 months, I felt like I had the deal, but it was mileage. You know, I was doing 40 to 60 miles a week. Usually average of 50. I think I peaked at 71 1 week, 70 miles, which is a lot of mileage. And I've got a family, you know, so I was getting up very early, so that I could be home and be with them on weekends. You know, I didn't want to miss family time. So I'd get up at 5 and run for 3 hours and get back at 8. And they were all sort of, everybody's sort of just stirring, you know, and that kind of thing. So I made, it was not easy. It was totally worth it, but it was not easy. But it began me thinking about what was really necessary in that kind of training.
Yeah. Because what you mentioned there, was that you have a philosophy, or what can I say? You teach a kind of philosophy that you call small steppers.
Right.
And tell us a little bit about that, because what I want to come to is the 50K that you did down in San Francisco, where you seem to have a approach like that, where you had a less approach to running at some point, right?
Yeah,
after those two first. So
small steppers is my approach, my philosophy of habit change. It's basically, as a nutritionist, I was working with people, you know, food related, but I realized that health is a way bigger picture than food, and a lot of people were coming to food for reasons of, you know, stress. And so it was like, if you don't deal with the stress, then it's gonna be too hard to make habit change on the food side if they're eating the food to relieve the stress of whatever. So I crafted, you know, it's what inspired my first book, and was a broad approach, not just food at all. In fact, in my book, only one chapter is on food, and every other chapter is not on food, because I realized this is a bigger picture. This isn't just about what we eat. This is, eating is like a manifestation of our stress and our values and all the sorts of things. And food's sort of the last thing we should deal with. We got to deal with us first, our heads. And so small steppers is an approach that teaches people how to manage their stress so that they can keep their stress levels low enough so that they don't get burnt out, but then also not too low so they don't do nothing, you know, they don't stagnate. So it's a training that it teaches people to keep their stress right in the right place, to just do enough where they're coming to it, they're not getting burnt out, they feel good about it, and they can stick with it long enough to actually make it a habit. And so that's been really effective. But the cool thing about it was that I then said, okay, well, I'd already done a few ultra marathons. So as I told Doug Hay on that podcast, I didn't have the pressure of like, can I finish my first? Like I did it as an experiment, and I figured if I don't finish, no big deal. Like I've done them before. So it's not, I didn't have that pressure. So, but what I decided to do was, what happens if I keep my stress a lot lower during training? What happens if I don't try to do 50 miles a week or 40 miles a week even? Mm-hmm. And what happens if I don't pay attention to food and I just sort of bring some or maybe not? What happens if I don't know anything about the course that I'm about to run, anything about the elevation, nothing? What if I show up with a bottle of water in my hand and nothing else, no pack? Because I used to, you know, when I would do races, I'd have a backpack with gels and Band-Aids and extra socks and powder and all this stuff. I thought, what if I just show up with a bottle of water and I just get to the aid station tables and see what they have? Don't even find out ahead of time. Just see what they have and eat whatever they have. And if I'm hungry and not, don't if I don't, what will that race day be like? And so I definitely ran, but I didn't, I mean, I maybe 20 miles a week and less sometimes. So and did fine and had a great day and the best recovery I've ever had. The next day my wife was like, you're like moving around. I go, yeah, I could run. I feel totally okay. So, it was an experiment for me. Now I'm not an elite runner. I didn't try to win top 10. My goal was, can I finish this race, feel good, feel strong at the end, and recover fast? And those, all those things I did. If I were trying to win the race, I wouldn't have done that. But this was not, you know, my world is in regular people doing, you know, living our lives. I'm not in the athlete, you know, elite athlete world. That's not of interest to me. And so I wanted to see, like, am I a dad of three and a husband? Can I do this race and really not train a ton and almost like nobody would even know I was training for something? Could I pull this off? And I did.
Do you think it helped having prior experience with the distance running?
For sure. I mean, look, as I told Doug, like I had a base of you know, I'm a runner. It wasn't like I had never run a race and then I was going to try this. Of course not. You know, like I have a good base. Last year, so I always run my own race the day before. So the Mendocino Coast 50K, I always run it the day before. I run the trail with a friend of mine, this guy named Skip Brand, who has a running store in Healdsburg. And so he comes up and he and I run the trail. And it's, you know, 34 miles. It's a little more than 50K. So it's a 34-mile run, and I already have it marked, but we bring some tape and make sure that we do extra marking if need be. Mm. Last year, I was so undertrained. Like, it was the longest I had run was like 10 miles 3 months before then. Like, I was barely running. And so I told Skip that day, I was like, I may not be able to get through the trail today. Like, I have zero training. Like, this isn't, I'm running, you know, a few days a week, 3 or 4 miles, like that's it. And yet it was fine. You know, it's like, yeah. We didn't go fast. I have a good base. So it wasn't like, you know, I wasn't like I was, could never do this. I knew that I had the general base, but the question was, you know, I was definitely sore than I was for the race that I had, you know, in San Francisco, but I have a good base. So yeah, in answer to your question, like I would never recommend somebody do this who's never run a race or doesn't know what it's like to be on tired legs at mile 27, you know? But for people who have runs before, it's an interesting, interesting experiment.
Absolutely. And, but do you do any other type of training like strength work or anything, beside running?
I do, yeah, and more so now than ever before. So I've been doing some rowing. I've been doing some biking, you know, stationary bike. I for years have been doing this thing called the TRX. It's these two straps that hook up to your wall, and it's like no machine. It's basically a very simple thing, but boy, you can do a lot of different exercises with that. So it's strength training. So I do that. I try to mix things up a little bit. And then running is sort of my go-to, but then I've been trying to make an effort. At the time that I did that race in San Francisco, I was doing a little bit of yoga also as part of this Wim Hof breathing cold therapy program. So I was in that program at the time that I did this. So I was doing yoga, you know, a little bit of yoga, 5-10 minutes a day, you know, most days actually. Mm. And so I don't know if that played into it, probably did it. Definitely helped me feel good. And so, yeah.
Yeah, that was really interesting because I remember at the time, this was in 2016, I think you talked about this a little bit on your podcast and you made a video afterwards because you were training on you were doing the Wim Hof training program of 10 weeks.
Right.
Right. So for everybody who doesn't know it, it's a program that he has and it's basically about the breathing. It's what's it called again? The breathing, is it holotropic breathing? No, it's not. It's called.
I don't know if they have a name for it. I mean, you're without stress. You're hyperventilating without stress.
So it's like in out in out. Yeah,
Yeah, it's fully in, and then you let go. You don't actually push. You don't push out, but you just let go, and then you fully in, and you do that repeatedly for about 30 to 40 breaths, and then you on the last one you let go and hold, and then when you feel like you need to breathe again, you breathe in and hold for about 15 seconds, and that's one round. And so I do still to this day. I've never missed a day. I'm going on in July. It'll be 3 years. You know, where every day I do it. I do about 4 or 5 rounds a day, and then I do some sort of cold therapy. So I either get into a cold shower, or I do an ice bath, or I get into the river or something. That I do that every day as well. And so, yeah, this was 2017 that I did that and the race itself. Mm. So I was actually in week 10 of the race of the training when I did the race. So it was sort of all joined up at the same time. And I think probably the cold therapy helped as well with the race. I think that definitely for sure. So that there was a few different things going on there for sure.
Yeah, it certainly seemed to, I would think it helped because the way you talked about it, you get into a little bit more of the details with the brown fat and the technicalities. But to make it short, you teach also the body to have a very efficient fat burning system.
Yeah,
with the cold therapy, right?
Yeah, with the cold therapy, and I also do intermittent fasting now. And so, you know, when I go every week, well, last 3 weeks anyway, I'm starting to do this every week. I do a long run I run from my house down to Mendocino, which is about 10 and a half. Although I run a little bit extra, so last week I did 13 miles, but I do that on water only. You know, so I get up, have water, run, and don't drink. I actually don't even drink anything during the run. Like I just, I run, I drink if something, if I'm thirsty. So 13 miles I ran in last Saturday and just on water only, no food. I've had nothing to eat since the night before and run down 13 miles with not even drinking water during the run. And then after the run, I drink some water with a little coconut water and eat, you know, maybe an hour or two after that, you know, and it's fine. That's a very different world for me than it was 5 years ago when I was like, okay, I got to drink, eat this and 20 minutes before I go. And then I got to have this every 20 minutes during the, you know, this whole thing. And I'm just playing with that. I'm like, is this really necessary? And the answer is, I think it's necessary if you're trying to be an elite runner. If you're trying to just be healthy and low stress and just get outside and have fun and be super healthy, you know, feeling really good, then no, it's not. None of that stuff is necessary. And I just want to make sure that people know what their goals are so that they don't get wrapped up into this, like, you know, have to time things and have to have this many calories and this many grams of carbohydrate. You can go, you make yourself crazy. And then all of a sudden you're not enjoying the process. And it's like, well, are you trying to be an elite runner or an elite athlete? Then okay, fine. But if you're not, then you don't have to do that stuff. That's for elite athletes. But you don't, you can just do this and have a family and have fun and go out and run 13 miles and not stress yourself out about it.
Yeah. Even though there are some people that kind of fall in between, not elite runners, but want to perform the best they can at a marathon or a half marathon and stuff like that.
Sure.
And then I guess it becomes a little more complicated, even though you don't have to make it as complicated.
But no, of course, it doesn't have. Yeah, and I think your point's right. Like, there's gray area people, but they do not need to make it as complicated as people are making it. Even for the people who want to, you know, PR. Let's say they want to have their personal record. They want to do the you know, they want to do a certain amount of time. Sure, there's going to be a little bit more maintenance in terms of training and taking care of, you know, that's why I'm now a running coach, because I want to, you know, get in on that level of tweaking that thing, but still not for elite. And I think people take so much time with this that they lose the, like, for me, it's not, and this is for even for an elite athlete, for me, it is way more about what you eat at all other times that you're not running than it is during the run. So to me, it's like, I don't want people hyper focused on how many grams of carbohydrate per hour during a run. I want to be like, what do you eat when you're not running? Because that's going to be your level of health and fitness, and that's going to enable your body to handle the stress of running way more than what you decide to do on a run day. And so my focus is, as a coach, as a health coach and or running coach, is going to be on that. Like, let's get the baseline health in a really good place so that then you can run more efficiently and run, you know, better. Even if you want to make your PR, you're still going to be able to set that stage in a really effective way.
So tell me a little bit about that, because you recently came into coaching. You took some training now the last few months, as far as I understood.
Yeah. I got way busier with it once I was stuck at home. I was sort of doing it, you know, a little bit each night. An online program. And once I was at home because of the coronavirus, I just decided, well, let me just, so I was starting to spend hours per day on it. So it took me about 2 months. And I just took the exam maybe last week or the week before. I can't remember. It's all blending, as you know. Yesterday I woke up and it was literally like, I literally don't know what day it is. That was the first time that's happened. I was like, I do not know what day is it. Is it Tuesday or Monday or Wednesday? I don't know. Anyway, but I passed the exam. So I'm technically a certified running coach at this time. I'm not insured, so I'm not taking any clients at this point, just because I want to make sure that I start a business, and I'm not going to do it right now while everybody has to stay at home anyways. But my goal is, when this all sort of opens up, I'll actually make it real and become insured and promote that around and see if anybody's interested in working with me on that level.
It's
something I've thought about doing before, and I was like, I wonder if they have programs that can do this, and so there were.
It seems like an expansion of your small steppers and the whole nutrition part. So how, I don't know if, we talked about that on the last podcast, but you are plant-based or vegan, as it's called.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, since pretty far back.
2002.
So yeah. Yeah, 18 years or something. And we talked a little bit about that on the last podcast. You had some issues with asthma and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, and you cut dairy and that helped. And you just, but
kept going.
To make a long story short, but in your kind of coaching, is that a part of it, to eat plant-based, or are you more like, what do you say, putting parts of it in, or how do you do it?
Yeah, I you know, with small steppers, it's, you know, most of my clients and people who sign up for my, you know, now I don't work with private clients per se, but, you know, the website Small Steppers, that people sign up for my 12-week programs, but it's really not food focused at all. So in fact, I don't even know if I think in the 12 weeks, I don't even mention food. I'll get questions on it occasionally because people know I'm a nutritionist and they know me from, you know, other things, but so they might ask about it, but really it's not a program. It's about it's a program of habit change. And so it can definitely be applied to food for sure. As a strict nutritionist, I never was trying to get somebody to be vegan. It wasn't my interest. What I want people is to be healthy, because obviously you can be vegan and be wildly unhealthy. There's very unhealthy ways to be vegan, as you know, like Oreo cookies and French fries. So and Coke, you know, so what I wanted to do was, and even cocaine. So what I wanted to do was get their heads in the right place where they understood the power of eating well and what that does for them. It's not about weight loss. It's about feeling good. It's about energy. It's about, you know, doing the other things that you want to do. And it's about enjoying food too. But it's really trying to set the stage of like, why are you doing this? That's really, I wanted people to ask themselves that question. Why? They'd come to me and they want to lose weight. I go, why? Why do you want to lose weight? What do you mean? Like, why do you want to lose weight? Well, I want to feel better. I want to be able to travel. Like, okay, that's why you want it. It's not because of weight. This isn't about weight loss. So this is about taking care of yourself and feeling good and doing things in your life and even looking good. Like, that's fine. Like, yes. So once I got that, then it was like, okay, well, here's the healthiest kinds of foods. And the more of these foods you put in, the better. And I always make a point to say, like, I don't eat 100% healthy. I know how to. But I don't, you know, I have a single, you know, you probably heard on my podcast, I'll have a single scotch, you know, single malt scotch whiskey. I'll drink a beer. I'll have, you know, those are both vegan. I'll have sourdough bread with, you know, butter on it. It's vegan butter. So what? It's junk food, you know? So the point is I want to educate people to where, like, these are the healthiest foods and why. And then the more of them you put in your body, the better. Now, if you put in a little bit of animal food, and not as, you know, but not that much, you're going to be totally healthy. I mean, you'll be phenomenally healthy. I just don't want people thinking that, you know, Oreo cookies are healthy, or that, you know, the steak is healthy, that it's a good thing. It's just a thing that you can do. And if you keep it minimized and like you would with, you know, other unhealthier things, you'll be better off. And if you eat more of the unhealthy stuff, you won't be. So it's sort of just like, how's that, you know, to set that stage. Now, I will say that a lot of people that I've worked with, and I, you know, back in the day when I was working with private clients, I'd work with them for a month, maybe like a year later, way beyond when they stopped working with me, they would become plant-based on their own because they started feeling better and they wanted more of that. They wanted to feel more of that. And so they would sort of in that line, they go, yeah, I decided finally, and it had nothing to do with me. It was just like their own trek of feeling better and actually achieving their goals they wanted. And to me, that's such a better way than me starting out the gate going, you should be vegan, and they have no idea why. You know what I mean? Yeah. So they get there on their own.
Yeah.
And that's preferable to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very good approach. I think it's a very good approach. You can never convince anyone of doing something they don't really want to do anyway. So why? I think people have to figure out for themselves.
And that, given that the knowledge and...
Yeah. Yeah,
so
give them knowledge. That's true, and that leads me into a thing I wrote down here, because there's a lot of information, or fractions of information, now online or on the internet. If you search, you know, for food or health or anything, and everybody seems to know a little bit or something, and they're trying to sell off and do this one thing and it's gonna fix everything and blah, blah, blah. What do you think about that? That there's so much information that it might be even confusing for people. And at the same time, a lot of, what shall I say, nutritionists or health people are trying to sell some kind of quick fix, you know?
Well,
some turmeric powder or something.
Yeah. And it's not like there's no validity to some of those things. And so I would say there's two types of people on the internet. There's people who, and in the world, not even just on the internet. So there's two types of people. There's people who have an opinion about nutrition. And it seems to me that most people have an opinion about nutrition. But at the same time, most people are not trained in nutrition. So I find it really interesting that everybody, it's like the one, it's one of the very few subjects that people will just dive into. And they'll be, oh no, you do this and this and this. And it's like, well, how do you know that? Well, you know, they can't even answer. And so, or a lot of times it's because their doctor told them, well, their doctor's not trained in nutrition. Most doctors are not, I mean, not in medical school at all. Some doctors decided, after medical school to train themselves in nutrition, but not, it wasn't part of the nutrition training, you know, it wasn't part of medical training. So they still dole out nutrition advice. Even my pediatrician, well, you got to make sure you eat dairy. Well, you have no idea what you're talking about and you shouldn't be talking about food because you're not trained as a nutritionist. So there's that type of person who has no training, but still weighs in on it. Then there's the type of person who has the training, but, and they maybe even have good advice, but then their ethic is that they're trying to sort of sell you the, like you said, the quick fix or the products that are sort of trying to keep you attached to them because it's financially beneficial. And it is, by the way. So if you can keep somebody coming back to you for 10 years, all the better. You know, I've talked to people who, I've talked to people who, you know, they come to me and they go, I've been going to a naturopath for 10 years. And I go, okay, well, you know, like if you've been seeing somebody for 10 years, there's probably a good chance that you're being grifted, you know, and you're buying pills from them every month, you know? So I never have sold anything nutritional. That was a rule I made when I finished my nutrition training, is that I was not going to, not going to sell anything nutrition related. I sell t-shirts, but I don't sell, anything, no bottles, no pills, no nothing. Now I have friends who do, and I know them and I know they're honest about it, and so I can wholeheartedly recommend things, but I'm not even attached financially to those things. I don't get any affiliate money or commission on anything, nothing. And I've been offered it and I turn it down. I just go, no, I don't want any attachment. So if I recommend a product to somebody, they know that I have zero affiliation with it at all. And so that makes me personally feel okay about what I do. It also makes me financially less successful, but it's, you know, that's kind of weighing that thing, you know, in my own personal life of like, do I want to feel good doing what I do or not? And that's where it is. And so, it's very confusing because when you have a financial goal, like if I could say to somebody, you need me. I mean, you should be paying me every month forever and coming to my retreats 5 times a year. And because there's no way you're going to be healthy without me, I would make a ton of money and I would be miserable and I would not be helping people do what they really came to me to get done, which is to feel, you know, to be healthier in their lives. And so it worries me because it's one of these things of like, I see it all over the place. The quick fixes, the people, there's a guy named Stephen Gundry who wrote The Plant Paradox, which is a debunked, ridiculous book. But he's all over the coronavirus, you know, and he's selling all these pills and all these things. He's probably cleaning up great, you know, but he's a grifter and people should stay away from him, you know? Yeah. So it's hard for me to watch that stuff and not be stressed about it.
Yeah. No, it's bad. It's bad. There's quite a few. Was he the guy who was on Joe Rogan on the podcast?
No, that guy's name was Chris Kresser, who's not, not a nutritionist. Yeah. And neither is Gundry, by the way. Chris Kresser is an acupuncturist, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. And talking all about, you know, this and that. And it blew my mind and turned out that I wasn't the only one. But I was like, I'll give this guy a chance. He was debunking the Game Changers movie. And so I said, okay, well, let me hear the other side of it. Mm-hmm. After 15, 20 minutes, like, I can't listen to another word this guy's saying. The things he was saying were so outlandish and were so ridiculous and illogical. It wasn't like he said, well, statistically, he didn't have any facts. He was like, oh, well, this is, I mean, it was just absolutely crazy. And Rogan knew it and still let this guy on. And then, but luckily, you know, brought him back with another guy from Game Changers and they debated it out. And this guy got he just got completely nailed because had nothing, you know, it was crazy. Mm. I see those kinds of things in those people in the world. And it's just so hard for me to watch that stuff because there's just, I will listen to anybody's opinion if it's well thought and it's educated. I have a very short fuse for people who are just just out there with an agenda trying to grift. You know, I don't like it. It's too, there's enough bad stuff in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I agree. No, I listened to your podcast and I remember that. And usually you're very funny when you, when you talk about things like that, because sometimes you talk to Joe directly. You hear me, Joe?
Yeah. As if he listens to my little podcast.
Yeah. but for people like me who listen to your podcast and know you a little bit, we know it's a joke. So, but anyway, it's really funny. Yeah. No, I didn't know he invited back and had a debate on it. I don't listen to Joe Rogan. I haven't got the time, actually. There's so many podcasts to listen to.
Oh, I know.
So, yeah.
I don't either. Usually, this one I listen to because it had to do with this particular subject, and so
yeah, I understand.
And then I listened to, and actually it was good because a buddy of mine, actually a friend of mine from years, I haven't talked to him in years, but he listens to the podcast. He lives in Los Angeles, and he emailed me and said, "Listen, you should go back and listen because Joe had this other guy, a producer from the movie, come on and debate it." And I thought, "Oh, good." So I wasn't the only one who had a big problem with this guy, and so other people must have emailed Joe Rogan and said, "You need to take care of this right away." You know,
yeah. Yeah, he needs to keep his integrity. He has a pretty big show, so...
For sure,
yeah. Yeah, but funny. A lot of these things also about nutrition and everything, it's a lot of things are based on fear, you know? They're trying to scare people to do things or not do things and saying, this is dangerous if you do it, and if you don't like this, you're going to be, you know... So, we need to educate ourselves a little bit also.
Look what they're doing in the U.S. Like, the president of the United States decided to use war powers to make sure that the meat plants were back open, even though they're not safe for the workers and, of course, not for the animals. But and now they're rationing meat, you know, like Costco here is... making sure, I'm going, meat, like that's the thing, because people are afraid of not having their meat. That's very amazing marketing. And I'm about to talk about that in my podcast today, because it's so funny, like that's fine, eat your meat. It saves the healthy food for the rest of us. You know what I mean? Like that's fear-based, you know, that is a very effective fear-based thing of like, well, that it's a necessity. Meat isn't, people think it's a, like they can't, they must, it's a must have. Mm-hmm. It's not a must have. I mean, it's certainly not a must have.
But they probably think it, probably 180 million people in the US think that they need meat to survive.
Oh, more than that. There's almost 400 million people here, in the States. It's a necessity. It's a staple. Yeah. It's a necessity. And think about that. How amazing that is that now people are freaked out and that's their go-to, not broccoli. No. You know, and so it's like, okay, fine, go eat that because it leaves more broccoli for me and my family, you know, and that's how I think about it. I'm glad I'm going to go eat that meat because it leaves more of the food, the real food for us. And so, but I feel bad for the animals, but
absolutely, anyway. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think things are going to change probably slowly and surely.
I hope so.
I hope so too. I saw a little bit, there was news here about the US that a lot of crops are just not being picked these days.
Yeah, can you believe it?
Yeah. That's really sad.
Oh,
that's worse than keeping, you know, they should pick the crops instead of keeping the slaughterhouses going.
I know. I know. And kids aren't getting enough to eat in this country right now. I mean, in the United States, the wealthiest country in the world, not getting enough food to eat. It's absolutely insane.
It's absolutely insane. So things need to change.
Yeah, they do.
Have you read the book by Michael Pollan, The Omnivore's Dilemma, is it called?
I scanned through it years ago. I felt like it was a little apologetic. You know, like I feel like he knows better, and yet he's still like, well, and I don't like that. You know, I feel like stand strong if you know, you know, and it's sort of like, I don't think we're omnivores, first of all. So it's sort of like the premise of the book I questioned a little bit. Mm. We technically can. I'm reading a really good book called The Meat Question right now about the anthropological history of our species, but really like factual, but also getting into the economic disparity that meat consumption actually caused in the world. Like it's kind of a mind blowing book. Anyways. I don't think we're omnivores, not biologically. Our ability to eat these things has enabled us to survive when we cannot get enough plants. Mm. That's amazing, but that's not optimal. And so it's a weird thing. Like when somebody goes, my husband's a carnivore. It's like, no, he's not a carnivore. He likes to eat meat. Mm. Like we can also eat Twinkies, mm-hmm. you know, that we can eat those things. It's not real food.
Can be a Twinkie war.
Yeah, exactly. Like we can eat it, but that doesn't mean it's appropriate for our bodies. That doesn't mm-hmm. mean it's optimal for our bodies. That means it's a potentially a survival. I mean, I would eat a Big Mac if it was literally nothing else to eat, but that's the only time I would ever eat it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so to say like the omnivore's dilemma, to me, there's no dilemma. You know, it's like we're herbivores by design. We do best when we eat more plants. If you want to eat other stuff, and I do too, like single malt scotch, mm-hmm. fine, but let's not make that appropriate. I don't mm-hmm. think single malt scotch is appropriate for the human body. I choose to do it and I do it in a limit so that I can be healthy and still do it, but that's the only reason. You know what I mean?
The interesting thing about that book, the title is one thing, but interesting thing about that book is that he was pretty honest on where food comes from yes. in the US and how they make it.
Yes.
Which is pretty shocking. Yeah, he still eats it.
That's my point, is that
he did debate it kind of with himself, but he fell on the, it was walking a line and then he kind of fell on the wrong side, right. I would say.
That's what made me mad.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because also that's another book. But what's his name? Jonathan Safran Foer. He's written a book called Eating Animals, and I have that book. And
yes.
he shows similar things, but more honestly. And he's falling on the other side. So he debates actually that Michael Pollan book a little bit. But what was interesting about Michael Pollan was that he did some research and he did show us how things are done in the US, and it's not very not very smart, I would say.
No, and he'll actually, and I've heard him interviewed, and he said, you know, we can't keep doing this. Like, we need to move to more plants. Like, it's and he acknowledges that, and to me it's like, well, then do that. Be an example for people and actually make that move yourself. You know, because I'm a big set the example guy. Like, I don't really want to listen to people who don't live the example. Yeah, no. I have a short fuse, maybe because I'm getting older, but if somebody's not living better than I am and making better decisions than I am, I don't have anything to learn from them, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's like, if you read that book and you learn all this stuff, and then you look at the guy who wrote it and you go, you're not even doing it. Then I go, okay, well, I'm done with you. You know, it's like, good information, thank you, but I'm moving on to somebody who's actually doing better than I am. Or, you know, and so I want to learn from somebody who I can look to and say, well, how are you doing what you're doing? Because you're doing better than I'm doing, you know?
Yeah.
And that's more interesting to me than somebody who knows better and chooses not to do it, even with knowing what they know.
I guess that's what evolution is about, you know?
I think, I hope.
Learn to do things a little bit better.
I hope.
Yeah, I hope so too. But anyway, you do, personally, you do a lot of things. You've acted in movies that we talked a little bit about that, your background in the last podcast. And you play music, or you write music, you play music, you have made some albums. I know you still write some music. You recently had a reunion with your old band members, I think.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a LA concert or something?
I did. I had. Yeah. When I turned 50, I decided for a gift to myself, I was going to try to see if the guys in my band would get together and play another show. And we did. And it was, so we did that last February of 2019.
Was it good to play again?
Oh, it was like great. Live?
Yeah,
super good. I mean, it wasn't the best. You know, it wasn't the, like, we rehearsed twice. We rehearsed like the day before, the 2 days before the show and the day before the show. And then that was it, you know? So, and we hadn't played together in 14 or almost 15 years. And so, but yet, even given that, we got through the songs quite well, considering, because we played together for so many years before that. So, but it was just so fun and great to get back. And then it got me really back into it. So I've been writing since then. I have another albums worth of music written, and then it's just a matter of finding a way to record it. I love to record it with those guys. If I can't make that happen, then I'll just do a solo album and figure out that step next. And so that's been really fun, and just another, you know, once I started doing what I do now with the health coaching, nutrition, things like that, it wasn't really something I talked about. But then I realized, you know, it's something about, you know, we can be multifaceted, we can do different things, and that's what's interesting about humans, is that we're not one thing. We can do different things, and that is related. Like, I realized early on, luckily, not as early as I hope, but anyway, I did realize fairly early, you know, a few years ago, that like, music is part of my health. You know, it's something that I do that I enjoy, and it's not, health isn't just running and eating. It is, it's the things that we do to give ourselves joy. It's art, it's creativity, it's even meditation, it's journaling, it's doing all these kinds of things that, that make up who we are. And when we do more of those things, we thrive. And that's really the question. So I started to little by little bring in the discussion of music a little bit more into my discussion of health and happiness. And in small steppers in the program, I definitely push creative things. I've had experiences with clients where, in a way, and I would argue this till now, that their eating habits are a result of the fact that they're stifled creatively, that they're that was, you know, they want to be a writer, but they're not writing, and they feel bad about that and stressed about that, and they feel like they should be writing, and then that stress is translating into not eating as well, because they're, you know, a lot of people eat to alleviate stress.
Absolutely.
And so teaching somebody how to bring that creativity back in, I, of course, use my small steps approach, but however you do it, bringing that little bit of creativity in, I've literally seen this affect their diet. They start eating better because they're feeling better because they're doing the thing that was now, they're not stressing themselves out anymore about it. And now they're eating better because they're feeling better. And it was a really interesting part of my trek in this world of to realizing, like, these affect, you know, so many things affect how you eat. So many things affect how you drink alcohol, you know, or smoke or whatever. Like, these are stress responses, you know? And so if you can minimize the stress, sometimes the habits will change in a really long-term way.
How have you felt personally a little more stressed in this situation than you normally would be? I guess the answer is yes, but how do you cope with it?
I definitely feel a little more stressed. I have to tell you, you know, like, I have the benefit of doing what I do is that I know how to do what I do. And I, again, because I'm a big set the example guy, I've for years always working to be, to utilize my own approach to be the person who handles these, to know how to handle these things. Because if I don't know how to handle them, then I can't teach anybody else how to handle them. So now that this happened, I jumped pretty quick into, okay, well, let me small step my way into my running program. So I didn't say, like, I'm going to do 8 hours a day, but I was like, okay, every day I'm going to open up this file, the next, you know, whatever it's module or whatever. Anyway, open it up and I'm going to spend 10 minutes a day. And then that grew pretty quick. I'm going to play music. I'm going to, you know, right out of the shoot, I did a daily podcast. I did a podcast every day for the first 8 days. So I jumped into doing things that would just immediately put me to work and in doing things, not trying to not be stressed about it. Cause it's really hard to say, like, I'm going to not be stressed about the coronavirus. So I said, okay, that's going to be what that is. But what if I do more over here? What if I, you know, put my thought into the podcast? What if I, you know, play my guitar? What if I do the running thing? What if I edit my book more regularly now? And that was just, and still this is what I'm doing now. And how do I continue to, you know, do this and manage my stress in this process. So I've been effective in that way. I felt pretty good. I exercise a little bit more, trying not to push it, but I'm trying to, you know, move a little bit more simply because I have the time. And that's making me feel fantastic. And so, you know, there's definitely stress there, but I think I'm handling it pretty well. And I've got kids and you do too, you know? Yeah. So if we're running around panicked, freaking out, and sitting on the couch drinking all day, what message is that sending to our kids? At the first sign of any kind of stress, we fall apart. What's that gonna do for our children? You know what I mean? And so it's, you know, we have things to think about as parents. We have to be the adult in the room so the kids can look to us and not be stressed about what's going on, you know?
Absolutely.
Right, and so that's been a priority for me and my wife right out of the chute.
Yeah, it sounds good. One thing I know you have eliminated to, I guess, relieve yourself from stress is social media, actually. You just cut that more or less out of your life, all channels like Twitter, your Facebook, your Instagram. You continued making videos, right, on YouTube, but you even left YouTube and went to the Vimeo channel.
But that
was on more or less on the moral base ground, wasn't it?
So I quit all social media, deleted all my accounts in by December of 2018. I deleted my last account. I deleted Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and even Strava, which I think Strava is a great site. I just, it was more of a distraction for me. I just like, I might as well just get this out of there too. I wanted to really see what it was like to not have any of that stuff.
Yeah.
YouTube for me, people say it's social media, and I think there's a little bit of the debate there. For me, it was not social media. I don't comment on stuff. I don't interact with people on social media. For me, it just wasn't. It was a video platform. So I thought, well, and it's part of my work, like my podcast. So it was like, okay, well, I'm going to continue posting videos, which I did. Then I started reading about how they're, you know, leading people on searches to inappropriate, if you search on a beautiful woman, then they recommend younger and younger women, and all of a sudden they're recommending videos with girls, young girls, and it was like crazy, and they knew it, and they weren't doing anything about it. Then they got fined because they were violating child privacy laws, and I thought, this is not a good company, and I don't want to be involved with it. So I left YouTube about 6 months ago, 7 months ago, went over to Vimeo, started posting there. Then, but keeping an eye on YouTube, and from what I can tell, they fixed those things. They're protecting the data, and they have when you post a video, you have to say if it's appropriate for children or not. So I'm back on as of last month. So I'm cautiously optimistic that I can stay on YouTube and feel okay about it. So right now I'm doing that. But what I did do is, and I just blogged about this actually, is all new videos on YouTube, I turned off the comments. There's no comments on any of my new videos. And so that was just a way that I could say, it really isn't social media for me. People would leave very nice comments. It wasn't about that. It's just, there's like, I don't want comments. I just want it to be a video platform. You watch the video, you get off, and you move on to something else. So I didn't want there to be a social discussion under my videos. And so I know it's not the smartest thing to do for videos, but it's what it is. So yeah. So if anybody goes on my YouTube channel, you'll see that the last, I think, 5 or 6 videos, the comments are turned off. And so I'm just doing, that's kind of where I'm at.
But it's still using the Vimeo also, or?
No, I'm back on YouTube. Not on Vimeo. I'm not posting to both places. So yeah, back on Vimeo.
I mean,
back on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah. One last thing I want to ask you was, do you still read, you studied philosophy, right?
Yes.
You have a major or? Yeah.
Yeah. Majored in philosophy at UCLA.
Yeah. Do you still read any philosophy, or is that kind of a thing of the past, or how is your approach to that?
I don't read philosophy too much. I'm either reading a book about nutrition or health, like the book I'm reading now, The Meat Question. I'm reading two novels. Right now I'm reading The Magic Mountain by Thomas Mann, and I'm reading this book called Sarah by J.T. Leroy, who is actually a woman named Laura Albert, who's become a friend of mine. So I'm reading her novel at the same time. So that's where I'm at right now. A lot of the philosophy training that I went through, I'm just utilizing. I'm less interested in reading other works than I am in doing my own thinking as it applies to my field, which is health and happiness, the nutrition of it, the health of it, the fitness of it, everything. So the ethics of it, ethics and morality as applied to health and happiness, that's kind of where my little area is. So I'm not reading philosophy as so much as I'm trying to be actually a philosopher, I'm trying to do like my new book is basically a philosophy of happiness book.
Okay.
So I'm in that book and doing my own thinking and really trying to craft my own approach and that's where I've been for the last few years.
Yeah. Because we didn't talk about that. You've written two books.
Yeah.
One called Approaching Natural. That's more that's not that long. I think that's readable in pretty short time. I have it on my Kindle. And then you wrote another one about parenting, but with a good title. What's it called?
Raising Healthy Parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of because all title is always about, the children, right?
But
it's basically a philosophy about how to take care of yourself, like you said earlier, so you can take care of your children.
That's right.
Which is a good philosophy. And
yeah.
I read that too, and I totally agree on it and can recommend it. So thanks. The next one now is more or less a philosophy on happiness. I guess it's based in the same take care of yourself and
It's called so the first book, Approaching the Natural, was a health manifesto. I would call this one a happiness manifesto. I'm not going to call it that, but that's kind of what it would be. It'll be on the short. I think Approaching the Natural is like 150 pages or something, but it's a small book, you know. It's like a book you put in your pocket, and that was on purpose. This book will, I think, hope will be the same kind of thing. It's called Six Truths. And it, well, the full title is Six Truths: Live by These and Be Happy, Don't and You Won't. And so that's where the title is. And so it's broken into six truths and basically things to follow and incorporate that I believe lead to happiness. And yeah, so that's what that is. And it'll be, you know, I want it to be fun to read. I don't want it to be dry. I want it to be, it's broken up into little subsections. So it's a kind of a quick, you know, get through, pick up a page, grab it, look at it, go back to it, you know, that kind of thing.
Have you read the Ryan Holiday's books? He's really into you know, Stoic philosophy.
Yes. I haven't read his stuff, but I know about him. A few people have turned me on. He has videos too, doesn't he?
He has videos too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen him.
No, he's been on. I guess he's been on the Ritual podcast and talked a little bit about that.
Cool.
Yeah, I want to ask about that. I guess you know about Stoicism in the history of philosophy, and it seems to have a kind of renewal.
It does. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's kind of, I wouldn't say your approach to things are so very differently. It's about reacting to things and not getting stressed up about them, and not putting yourself in the position where you have to be stressed, where you do. Where you take bad decisions, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But they're pretty fun read because he's read his history, so he has a lot of, you know, examples from history about people who were more or less Stoics, you know?
Right.
So I think they're good as an approach or as a kind of way into Stoicism, because I tried reading the old books and they're
heavy.
Yeah, they're heavy. So yeah. I guess we need them more or less, updated to our modern times. Yeah,
that's right. And I think anything or approach that return or at least focuses us on the stuff that is actually going to deliver us happiness, which are the basic things. At any given time, if you shed all the stuff that we have and you take it away, to assume that we would no longer be happy because we don't have a bunch of stuff, and yet you look at our culture and we're getting less happy, less healthy, and we're more abundant than we've ever been. So to me, any move to return people to this reality and truth, which is that the simpler we live, really the happier we are. I mean, it really is a fact. The technology and things that we buy are, in a sense, I look at them as drugs in the same way that I look at junk food as drugs. They don't deliver you true happiness, but they deliver you the short-term feeling of happiness. And so it's a drug hit. And so you got to keep going back for more. And so I really like any kind of philosophy or move that says, okay, let's simplify and really return to true happiness, which is not going to be based in spikes, but based in an overall rising of our day-to-day happiness. And that's going to be very simple things: family, friends, actual socializing, not social media, you know, interactions with people, living very simply, reading, writing, you know, doing those kind of simple things. That's always been those things that make us happy. And yet we've been fooled because of good advertising to think that we need the next toy. We don't.
Yeah. I gotta agree on that. It's well put. I think it's a good way to end this conversation.
Cool.
But hang on, so I can talk to you a bit after I stop the recording.
Anyway,
thank you, Sid. I urge everybody to listen to your podcast. I don't know how it is to jump into it now, because I've been listening for such a long time. I think when I started listening to podcasts, that was one of the first. Just by random, some, you know, how life is, I just found yours and stuck with it. So
cool.
It's been a good long, you made one before this one called Approaching Natural. That was over 200 episodes. So you have a 300 plus episodes. And I think it's really impressive, because you do everything solo, or more or less.
More I know you less, had yeah, some interviews.
You have some interviews on the last one, actually. Yes. And I remember now, I also wrote that, I think his name is Matt Fitzgerald, isn't he?
That's
you
right.
talked to him once, yeah. Because yes. I've talked about the book he wrote on this podcast, the 80-20 running philosophy yeah. thing. Yeah, that's a good book if you want to get
it. It's a great book. Yeah, I didn't interview him on that book. Mm. That came out after my last interview with him.
Okay.
But he did the How Bad You Really Want It, How Bad You Want It, really good about the mental side of you know, you've got these elite runners and why does one, you know, win and one doesn't, even though their fitness wise is the same. And he's a really good writer. And so yeah, the 80-20 is a good book too.
Yeah. I've used some of his programs when I PR'd my half marathon. That was his program.
Oh yeah. No, he knows what he's talking about.
He does. Yeah. Yeah. So I can recommend that. But anyway, thanks for talking to me and hope everything gets back to normal more or less soon in the States. We're following that from here, of course. You know, we get a lot of news from the United States into Norway. But of course, it's most this guy talking and saying stupid things, which is a bit sad. But I'm trying to.
We think so, too.
Yeah. Hopefully something can change there also, but we don't know.
I hope so.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Sid. And have a great day because it's in the morning for you. Did you get your coffee yet?
I have not had my coffee yet. I will right after this.
Yeah.
And thank you for having me on. And I'll add one thing that it is a good there's one benefit of this time, which is that we do have this technology that allows us to chat when you're in Norway and I'm in a little town in Mendocino. So there's definitely some good parts about technology when we use it right. It's pretty cool to be able to talk to you.
Definitely when we get it right. I think I can hear you so well. It's the best sound I ever had over online, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Like it's like we're on a regular phone call.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
Yeah. Okay, but thanks again, Sid.
All right.
Hopefully speak to you sometime in the future.
Sounds great.
Yeah, great. Ja, det var litt sånn, jeg hadde jo ikke lyst til å legge på. Vi gjorde heller ikke det da. Vi snakket videre. Jeg stoppet den opptakeren, og så hadde vi et oppsett hvor vi hadde tatt opp via laptopen, så hadde med meg og sånn. Det var aldri gjort det på den måten før, da, men i hvert fall så var det en samtale som fortsatte litt og sånn. Og vi får se, jeg tror kanskje jeg kan legge den på Patreon. Vi begynte å snakke om Bergen, og det morsomme med Sid er at han nevner vel at han er litt sånn, han er opptatt av Norge da, og synes Norge virker veldig forlokken, og antydet nesten at han ville flytte hit hvis det hadde vært jobb og sånn. Så jeg fortalte om Bergen, og han kjenner til Oslo, men jeg har ikke hørt om Bergen, så jeg lovte å sende han litt info om Bergen. Så til alle dere som bor i Bergen, send han en mail, melding, whatever, og si kom til Bergen. Det hadde jo vært kult. Jeg vet han har vært en del ute og reist. Han holder ganske mye. Han drar ganske mye rundt på sånne festivaler, sånne veggie-festivaler og prater og sånn. Ganske kjent i det miljøet. Jeg vet han har vært i Skottland og litt sånn forskjellig og pratet, så hvorfor ikke Norge? Hvis jeg kan gjøre noe, så skal jeg jobbe for det. Men hvor er vi? Jo, vi er i mai, altså. Denne uka så er det 17. mai og greier. Hvem skulle ikke ønske nå at vi kunne hatt den 17. mai og bare spist is og bare klinga oss opp i mennesker og satt i dressen vår og drukket Prosecco og Gud, vi savner livet før denne tullete zoonosen også. Vi må slutte med det. Vi må slutte med å rote det til sånn at vi får de der virusene som er så jævla forbannede. Unnskyld språket her nå. Jeg regner med at det er dere hardcore fansen som fortsatt sitter og hører på, så jeg banner litt. Blir litt lei. Ja, men vi kommer oss dit dere alle sammen, ok? Vet du hva jeg savner? Jeg savner å stå i en klynge med tusenvis av andre og hoppe nervøst før startskuddet går ut på en 10 kilometer, en halvmaraton, en maraton eller lengre eller hva som helst. Jeg kan bare ikke få undersøket hvor mye jeg savner egentlig det der absurde fellesskapet. Der, og bare være en løper blant mange. Jeg løper for tiden, men jeg klarer ikke å holde så mye struktur på det. Jeg tenker bare at jeg må ut og holde beina i gang.
så får vi heller bare strukturere det litt når den tiden kommer. Som vi vet, som jeg har sagt her veldig mange ganger, kontinuitet er viktig. Det er viktig på mye. Vi glemmer fort det som vi ikke driver med. Men heldigvis så er det lett å komme inn i ting igjen. Så hvis det er sånn at du ikke har løpt på en stund, bare gjør det igjen. Det går bra. Vi trenger ikke å gape over så mye av gangen. Og så er det selvfølgelig veldig mye jeg har glemt å si, men atter en gang, bare takke Patreons, takke deg som lytter fast til podcasten. Det er ikke verst, bare det. Jeg hadde en, som jeg nevnte, en samtale med en venn av meg nå nylig, før jeg spilte inn det her, og jeg sa, å, har du hørt den, nå har du hørt den, nå har du lest det, har du lest det. Han bare, nei, å, det er så mye å lese, det er så mye å høre, det er så mye å sjekke ut, og det er det jo. Det er vanvittig mye, men ta inn litt hver dag da, og husk på at det er ikke noe vits å sitte og scrolle på den Instagramen helt uendelig heller. Det er liksom ikke noe nytt. Jeg har blitt litt bedre på å kutte ned på bruken av det. Selv om det er morsomt å titte og sånt, så er det er litt sånn, ja, det er litt det samme på nytt og på nytt og på nytt og på nytt. Så vi får bruke tiden vår klokelig, vår tilmålte tid her på denne lille grønne planeten i Melkeveien. Ikke glem det, vi har det mest fantastiske stedet i universet, rett under våre føtter. Så ta vare på henne da, ta vare på moderen, moder jord, så kan hun ta vare på våre barn og barns barn og barns barn og barn også. Ok? Jeg er glad i dere alle sammen. Vi ses ved senere anledning.